everybody's in the same old boat. Don't you know it ain't right for people to go hungry with all the food being thrown away just because it ain't the right size or perfect? Because you can't turn a fast dollar that way. You know it ain't right to make people grow coffee when their families could be growing food, working those lands for corporations. Don't do hungry people no good, because people need food in their belly. Need some drink for the dying their throat, for the world to recognize it. Everybody's in the same holy boat. People got to have food.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. And this is The Food Show. And today we have one of the greatest shows in all of Portland. So I hope you're ready for a wonderful time. We have Eric Schlosser live in the studio with us. And I got a chance to interview a lot of local Portlanders about what they think fast food and what they think slow food is.
A long time. And he now has a new book out called Chew on This, which covers many of the same subjects, thoroughly rewritten, and it's aimed at a younger crowd of readers. And also, he has a co-author who's not with us, but his name is Charles Wilson. Eric, how is this book different from Fast Food Nation?
It's different in that it's aimed at the kids who are being targeted by the fast food chains. The subject matter is very similar. A lot of the issues are similar, but we really tried to rethink it and rewrite it so that it was accessible to kids 9, 10, 11 years old, and tell a lot of the stories about this subject through the lives of children and how they're impacted. Fast Food Nation came out 5 years ago. I've learned a lot more about the industry, and I've tried to include new material that I didn't know before. But the main difference is who the readership should be. And ideally, the readership for this new book are these kids who are really, they have like a target on them that these companies, the fast food, junk food, and soda companies are aiming at.
Well, in what ways? I've read the book, and I know that you talk about how actually the fast food industry, as it has developed pretty much since World War II, has targeted young people from the beginning.
It has, and Ray Kroc, who was the founder of the McDonald's Corporation, was very blunt in his memoir about why they decided to target children. And Kroc, by the way, didn't have any children of his own. They found that whenever there was a child involved in a restaurant visit, there was a larger average check size because a child couldn't come in by himself or herself and would bring a parent or parents or siblings or grandparents. So it seemed like a whole new way to increase revenue. Later, they realized also that, you know, a person's eating habits are developing very young, and that if they could get children to really like this food and really feel loyal to the brand early, they could have lifelong customers. In the book, we quote from a soda industry publication about why the soda companies are going into elementary schools. And the memo, you know, this article says 8-year-olds are an ideal target for the soda companies because of how formative they are still and how many years of purchasing soda they have ahead of them.
Well, you mentioned sodas. Let's actually jump ahead to just, I think it was last week, former President Clinton. I don't know how he got involved in this, but he has just negotiated a deal with the big soda companies to reduce the amount of soda that's sold in public schools. Are you familiar with this?
Absolutely. The book came out last week, and it's been a very good week. I mean, that soda deal was announced, and Disney announced this past week that they're not going to do any more promotions with unhealthy fast food chains. Former President Clinton had a fast food diet, and then he had triple bypass. And he helped broker this agreement with a conservative Republican governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, who suffered from obesity, developed diabetes because of his fast food diet. And the two of them met with the soda companies and said, look, this is a public health disaster unfolding. What are you going to do about it? And I give the soda companies real credit. They're not going to sell sugary, high-calorie drinks to children in schools anymore. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has gone a little further than this agreement, though. And Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in California, Republican, has signed legislation and pushed hard for legislation to kick junk food and soda out of the schools, period, by law. And I think this is a sign of how the tide is turning. These are not, you know, far left-wing agitators. These are mainstream politicians who are realizing the obesity epidemic among children has gotten so bad that we need to do something serious about it. And soda has absolutely been linked to obesity in children, soda consumption. A 12-ounce can of soda has the equivalent of 9 or 10 teaspoons of sugar in it. So if you have a large Coke at a fast food restaurant, which is like 32 ounces, that's like having 30 teaspoons of sugar in one sitting. If it's a hot day like it's going to be today in Portland, and you're thirsty, that's really easy to drink. But when you look at this soda consumption, especially the high fructose corn syrups they're using in the soda because it's even cheaper than sugar, this is something I believe that really is encouraging poor health among children and adults as well. So things are turning in the right direction, but these companies aren't just giving up and are fighting back in ways that I think are pretty nasty.
Yeah, and they have a long history. Could we go back a little to Disney and to the marketing of toys and so on? And can you talk a little bit more about just how, what methods the companies have used to target kids?
Well, Disney was truly the pioneer in Southern California, especially 1930s, of a whole new way of marketing to children. And in a way, it was synergy. There wasn't one product being sold. It was many, many products all at once connected by an idea. Connected by the Disney idea and the idea of happiness and, you know, Disneyland being the happiest place on earth in the early 1950s. Ray Kroc, who was the founder of the McDonald's Corporation, knew Disney, had served in the same World War I ambulance corps, and I think was very influenced by Disney. So when you see, for example, the first McDonald's TV ads in the early 1970s, the McDonald Land set was created by former Disney set designers. The music was written by former Disney composers. And again, there was a real concerted effort at McDonald's not to be selling any one particular product to children, but to be selling an idea, a feeling, fun and friendship, and most of all, happiness. You know, it's called a Happy Meal. So there are real links. And in McDonald's case, I think it began, their marketing began innocently enough. They gave out lollipops to kids. They had a clown, you know, who had played Bozo the Clown and came to a restaurant in Washington, D.C. When Bozo was canceled, this clown came up with a new name, Ronald McDonald. The actor who played him was Willard Scott, who later became the weatherman on the Today Show. And so a clown, a lollipop, later a toy, but it's gotten much more sophisticated today. The fast food chains have marketing agreements with the major Hollywood studios, with all the leading cartoon figures, with the leading athletic leagues, pop stars. Now they're into schools. They use very sophisticated research techniques, focus groups even for toddlers, child psychologists, social anthropologists to study children. In the book, we have a photograph that I think is amazing of the latest frontier of marketing to children, which is called neuromarketing. They're putting kids into MRI machines and studying their brainwave patterns as they watch different TV ads. There's a part of the brain responsible for brand loyalty, and they're watching when that part flashes up on the screen to show how to craft their ads. So, you know, this is a lot of very smart adults trying to figure out how to manipulate some very small, impressionable kids. Studies have found that, you know, 2- and 3-year-old kids are unable to differentiate between what's an ad and what's entertainment. And if you have the same cartoon characters they love, like SpongeBob, in their entertainment and in their ads, you know, it's hard for kids to know when companies are trying to get them to buy things. So this book is intended really not to tell children what to eat, like their mother might do, but to tell them what they're eating and how these companies, you know, target them so that they can be aware when this is happening.
Well, what about when a child goes to school? You don't have a choice of what to eat. You're served something. And now, in recent years, some of these fast food companies actually have the contract to run kitchens in schools.
Yeah, and we have a sample menu in the book, which is from an Illinois school. And I mean, one day it's McDonald's, the next day it's Pizza Hut, the next day it's another fast food chain. These companies talk a great deal about personal responsibility and parental responsibility, in particular when it comes to children, and then they deliberately market in places where parents are not present. So you could have the toughest, you know, best diet at home with your kids, and then you send them to schools, and there's ads for Burger King, and there's ads for all these soda companies, and they're actually, you know, managing and selling food in the cafeteria. I just saw a poll yesterday in which 90% of the American people think that schools shouldn't be selling unhealthy food and schools shouldn't be selling soda in school. So these guys have gotten in there, but I think if popular opinion and what this country really wants to happen, they'll either be kicked out or they'll fundamentally change the foods that they're selling to kids.
And how does fast food affect young bodies differently than it does from adults?
Well, children are developing not only their eating habits, but their bodies are fundamentally being formed. And if you look at these fast foods that are being marketed to kids, they tend to be very high in calories, high in fat, high in salt, high in sugar, all kinds of additives, very low in fiber, very low in micronutrients. These are the ideal foods to make you unhealthy if you eat them a lot. A very scary statistic in the book is that right now, one out of every five toddlers in America is eating fries every day. And aside from the fact that those French fries are probably very high in fat, if they're purchased at a fast food restaurant, they're high in trans fats. Mm-hmm. Trans fats are these man-made fats in these very cheap cooking oils. The fast food restaurants like them because you can reuse the oil more frequently, and it's inexpensive, and it's shelf-stable. But the National Academy of Sciences studied trans fats a few years ago to come up with a recommended amount that you should eat, and their conclusion is zero. So if you get one of these children's meals for your child that has fried chicken nuggets and French fries, that's about 5 grams of trans fat right there. Kids should have none of it. And we're seeing literally children who are 9 and 10 years old, who are obese, exhibiting cardiovascular damage already and plaque on their arteries already. And this is a disaster.
Some of this is actually in the development of the foods. Could you talk a little bit about how J.R. Simplot, who is a billionaire now, a potato grower in Idaho and eastern Oregon, actually, redeveloped potatoes that are, I guess, sweeter just for the fast food industry?
Well, what Simplot did was to revolutionize the potato industry. Potatoes have long been the most popular vegetable in the United States. I mean, that's the vegetable that we've eaten for many years more than any other. They store for a long time. They can be cooked in many different ways. But people used to, until recently, eat fresh potatoes. They'd be baked, they'd be sautéed, they'd be cooked in all different kinds of ways. What Simplot did, which was revolutionary, was come up with the technology and the cooking methods for the frozen French fry. And it was the frozen French fry that allowed McDonald's to stop using fresh potatoes and have this uniform French fry that would taste the same hundreds and hundreds of different locations. And this new one type of potato, the russet Burbank, really dominating all potato production in this country because that was the ideal potato for McDonald's French fries. Again, Americans up until the 1970s had most of their potatoes fresh. Now, overwhelmingly, most of the potatoes that Americans eat are fried. Most of them are frozen French fries. Most of them are from fast food restaurants. And it made J.R. Simplot one of the wealthiest Americans in the United States. Now, there's a certain sugar content that's ideal for these French fried potatoes, these fast food French fried potatoes. And Simplot and the other companies sell their potatoes to all the different chains. And so there are different times of year when the sugar content will vary in the potatoes. So sometimes they leach the sugar out because there's too much. Sometimes they add the sugar. But in writing about the French fry, which I love to eat, by the way, I'm just trying to show how this food that looks like something that we've always been eating is now a new thing. It's an industrial commodity. It comes out of an enormous factory. And I take the reader through one of these French fry factories. It looks like an oil refinery. It's about the industrialization of everyday foods that especially kids would have no idea has gone on.
Kids might also be concerned about the workers in these factories, or might soon become the workers in these factories, and also at fast food restaurants. I remember when I was probably college age, just finished with high school, I learned that even then, and I'm talking around the year 1970 or so, 10% of all working Americans had already worked at McDonald's at least once in their life.
Yeah, I think it's 1 out of 8 now, which is extraordinary.
So can you talk about working conditions, both in the production and in the retail?
Well, let's start with the restaurants themselves. In the book, we list all the dictionaries that now the definition of McJob as being a low-paying job with little possibility of advancement. McDonald's hates that and has written to the dictionary companies to change the definition, but it's a fact. That's what these jobs tend to be. The fast food industry is the largest employer of minimum wage labor in the United States, and it's no coincidence that in the last 25 to 30 years, as the fast food industry has grown, the value of the minimum wage adjusted for inflation has dropped by about 45%. So since the late 1960s, what that means is a pay cut, 45%, for the poorest workers in this country. The last time the minimum wage was increased was in 1997, and the minimum wage today, adjusted for inflation, is 21% lower than it was in 1997. And it should come as no surprise that the fast food industry is the biggest opponent of increasing the minimum wage, because they have profited enormously from this. So when you talk about a fast food job, you talk about one of the lowest paid jobs in society. You talk about a job in which they deliberately do not want to train their workers, in which most of the knowledge is built into the machinery. And so being a fast food worker at one of the big chains is really to just be following the instructions of buzzers and flashing lights, et cetera, et cetera. These jobs tend to come with no benefits. In California a few years ago, the legislature passed a law and the governor signed a law requiring all major corporations in the state to provide health insurance for their workers. Now, right now, about 99% of the big corporations in California already do provide health insurance for their workers, but a couple of notable ones don't, McDonald's and Walmart. And McDonald's and Walmart spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to overturn this legislation with an ad campaign on TV that was so deceptive and so dishonest about what the impact of this law was going to be, and they managed to overturn the law. So McDonald's puts out a lot of press releases about how good their jobs are, but when it comes to actually providing health insurance for their workers or supporting laws that will increase the wages of the workers, they and the rest of the industry tend to be big opponents. Now, there are some companies that are paying decent workers, decent wages to their workers and providing health benefits. In-N-Out Burger in California pays very good wages, actually is using fresh ingredients that the workers have to prepare. There's another chain, Panera Bread, which is giving very good health benefits. I believe here Burgerville is providing good benefits to their workers. And so you don't have to treat people poorly in order to run a restaurant. And when you think about it, preparing food for people should be a job with an incredible dignity. I mean, what could be more essential to the society than have workers making food for people? Unfortunately, at most of these big chains, these workers are not being treated with any dignity and, on the contrary, are being treated like they're completely disposable and interchangeable.
Well, we've talked about the drinks and the potatoes. How about the meat that's served in the...
And that actually brings to the other workers. The immigrant workers who are being exploited in the big slaughterhouses and meatpacking plants. On May 1st, when recent immigrants and illegal immigrants emerged from the shadows and said, we will not simply be exploited, incredible what happened on May 1st in this country, it should come as no surprise that the major slaughterhouses shut down. And they shut down because the meatpacking industry has become completely dependent on recent immigrants, on illegal immigrants, on a very vulnerable workforce. This is the most dangerous job in the United States, measured by the rate of serious injury. The wages have been cut by more than 50% over the last 20 years or so. And in Fast Food Nation, and to a lesser extent in this children's book, I try to show what's happening to the workers who bring you your Whoppers and Big Macs. And it's a very unpleasant story. In terms of what's happening with the cattle, that's also unpleasant. I mean, in the last 25 to 30 years, we have seen the industrialization of livestock in a way that no society has ever treated animals this way. Feedlots with 100,000 cattle in them, crammed together like a medieval city, living in their own filth. Cattle have not lived this way before. Poultry houses with tens of thousands of birds crammed so closely together that they can't move. Again, living in their own filth. Terrific article this month in Harper's on the hog industry and how hogs are being raised in these hog houses. This is, to me, it's madness. And it's not only cruel to these animals, but it's producing a product that I think is very unhealthy for consumers. And you have to keep in mind that the fast food industry is at the top of this food chain, and that these, you know, McDonald's is the biggest purchaser of beef, biggest purchaser of chicken, biggest purchaser of pork in this country. And if they were to say, we want things done differently, things would be done differently.
Well, can we assume that the food at an independent restaurant is healthier or produced in better ways?
You know, it all depends. You can't make any blanket statement, but there are companies that are trying to do things differently. And again, I mean, I'm not a paid spokesman, but I mean, Burgerville has this agreement that they're sourcing, you know, or naturally raised free-range beef from this local area. There's a real change in the attitude towards foods. Unfortunately, most of that change is coming in the eating habits of upper middle class and well-educated people. And so we've seen a huge in organic production, a huge increase in sustainable farming and in sustainable meat production. But we've got to get these major, major fast food chains to begin to change their sourcing. And when they start to change, it's going to really revolutionize agriculture in this country.
Well, Eric, a lot of people still obviously go to the big chains and buy the food that they serve there. And I think by this time, most Americans know about these issues and are still buying there. I mean, what about free enterprise? What about the consumer being able to vote with their dollars?
The one thing that I would argue with is that most Americans know about this. I mean, I consider myself a fairly well-educated person, and I certainly didn't know anything about it until I started doing the research for Fast Food Nation. I absolutely believe in personal responsibility, and that's why I'm a writer who writes books, investigative books, to give people the information to make these choices. If you look at obesity in this country, the more well-educated you are, the less likely you are to be obese. The more well-educated you are, the less likely you are to buy this fast food. The growth of whole foods, the growth of an entire new attitude towards eating and towards production is mainly in the educated upper middle class. So I do believe that when people understand this industrial food system, they don't want to eat the food. And the really important move now is to bring this kind of information and to bring healthy food to the poor. It's the poor in inner city communities that are being targeted by the fast food chains. Fast food industry is pursuing a strategy very similar in many ways to that of the tobacco industry. As educated upper-middle-class people stopped smoking because they realized the harms of tobacco, the tobacco industry really focused on low-income communities, on people of color. It's exactly what the fast food industry is doing now. There was an article in the New York Times about how most of McDonald's profits is coming from the dollar menu in inner-city communities, food for the poor. When you look at the dollar menu, you can get a cheeseburger for a dollar, you can get a fried chicken sandwich for a dollar, but there's no salad, there's no apple slices for a dollar. So we've really got to bring, you know, the knowledge and the opportunity that the well-to-do and the middle class now has in this country to the communities that really need it.
And not just the poor communities here, but in the third world, a lot of folks are seeing these chains for the first time, and here for the first time in their lives for a lot of them, is what they consider a reliable, inexpensive source of nutritious food.
Yeah, and again, very similar to the tobacco industry. The tobacco industry is pushing aggressively into China. I think China may soon, if it isn't already, will soon be their largest market. The fast food chains are doing the same. They're relying on the fact that people aren't aware of all the consequences of this food. In foreign countries, McDonald's and the other fast food chains have a different role, though, in the sense that they represent modernity. They represent American culture. They're often more expensive than the food in other places. And when McDonald's moves into a foreign country, they often first market to the elite and open in upscale neighborhoods. When they opened in Tokyo, they opened in the most expensive neighborhood in Tokyo. And then gradually they begin to filter down in society and appeal to ordinary working people. So in Thailand and Vietnam and China, it has a slightly different demographic. They target the elite first and then try to move down the economic scale.
Well, Eric Schlosser, a lot of what you talk about is pretty depressing. And when you're a teenager, a lot of what you is depressing. You learn about wars and so on when you're studying history. What can kids do if they're concerned about these issues? What are kids doing?
Well, these problems are depressing, but I'm actually quite optimistic, sincerely optimistic about change. When I wrote Fast Food Nation 5 years ago, I felt like so many of these issues weren't being discussed. The fact that Republican governors of different states are kicking these junk food companies out of the schools is amazing. There's been a sea change in public attitude, and I really think these companies are going to have to change their behavior. So I wouldn't be depressed. This isn't reason to be depressed. I think there's good reason to be energized and work towards change because it's possible. And when it comes to kids, the food they buy is probably the most important thing they're going to spend money on. If they buy clothing or video games and they don't like them, they can just get rid of them. This food enters their body, becomes part of them, has profound implications for whether they're going to be healthy or unhealthy or live a long life or die young. And so what I'm hoping to do is provide information to kids so that they can make their own choices and choose to have a sustainable life. I mean, we talk about sustainable agriculture or a sustainable environment. Well, people have to develop for themselves sustainable lifestyles so that they develop habits they can have their whole life. And I think it's possible for kids to eat food that tastes good that doesn't have the same harms to their body. So we'll see.
Okay. We've been talking with Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, and now co-author with Charles Wilson of Chew On This, Everything You Don't Want to Know About Fast Food. Eric Schlosser will be speaking in Portland this evening at the First Congregational Church. This is sponsored by Powell's. First Congregational Church is in the South Park Blocks, 1126 Southwest Park at Main. That's at 7 p.m. Eric Schlosser, thank you very much for coming on the Food Show on KBOO.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right, we're going to have a short music break, and then we'll be back.
If you want to
buy some pork chop
and also
juicy lamb chop, stop at Sammy's Butcher Shop and see him chop, chop, chopping on his chopping block.
You want some
nice bologna, spare ribs not so bony. He has variety in stock, and he will chop, chop, chop it on the chopping block.
He's a guy you'd like to meet. He's fat and short and very sweet, for he gives you a big hello. He's like a comic in the picture show. If you want some
good salami
and Swiss cheese,
or pastrami, be sure to stop at Sammy's shop, and he will chop, chop, chop it on his chopping block.
Listening to KBOO Portland. I recently got a chance to the streets and businesses out in Portland and got to ask people, what do they think fast food is? And also I asked them what they think of slow food. And I got a lot of great responses, and I hope you enjoy my interviews with all these wonderful people. This is Jake with KBOO Radio. I'm here with Rose. Hi, Rose.
Well, hi. How nice to see you this afternoon.
What is fast food?
What is fast food? It's what it is.
And do you find yourself eating fast food often?
Oh, yes. Several times a day.
And what most characterizes the fast food that you eat?
What I like really is the raw food, raw fruits and raw veggies that I like to eat, like radishes and others in that same family, in the radish family.
My next question is, what is slow food?
Slow food? Well, there are some foods that cook slowly and taste better. That's the only answer I seem to be able to hang on to or get to.
I'm at the Daily Grind with the bulk department manager. What's your name?
Jarris.
I have two questions, and one is, what is slow food?
Oh, I don't really know what slow food is.
Okay, what is fast food?
Oh, fast food is like the stuff that sends you to the grave, that they sell at Mickey D's and Burger King. No, oils, salts, grease.
And how often do you eat fast food?
I don't eat fast food.
And so my next question, going back to my first question, what is slow food?
Probably that produce rack over there.
And how often do you find yourself eating slow food?
5 days a week.
I'm here at the Fresh Pot. Lisa, I have two questions. One of them is, what is fast food?
Fast food is food that is created at the expense of health to make a quick commodity for people on the run, low standards on health or diversity, just getting it produced and consumed neatly and orderly and quickly.
And my second and last question is, what is slow food?
Slow food? I don't know. I guess I've heard the expression. Slow food, I think, is food that is created with a purpose other than just for filling, calories. Take your time to eat it and enjoy it and understand it, where it comes from and how you prepare it, how you share it, things like that.
And can you tell everyone your name and what your favorite food is?
My name is Lisa, and I think my favorite food is artichoke.
I'm here with
Leon Latino.
Hi, Leon. I have two questions. My first question is, what is fast food?
Fast food is prepared quickly and, in my opinion, focuses a bit too much on convenience over things like flavor, nutrition, or tradition.
And my next question is, what is slow food?
Slow food would be the opposite. I think it's got some roots. Maybe it's family recipes, and it also has, in general, more nutritional value, and people take pride and joy in preparing this food and in eating it.
Great, thank you. What is fast food?
Fast food, when I think of fast food, I think of McDonald's and Burgerville, usually unhealthy, although it doesn't have to be, but yeah.
And how often do you find yourself eating fast food?
I don't eat out that much. When I eat fast food at home, it's usually like pasta with Parmesan cheese, and that's fast for me, so usually probably a couple times a week I don't have time to make something good, so I just eat like pasta or something quick.
And what is slow food?
Slow food is, I think it's generally when you go to a restaurant and sit down and someone prepares it for you. I think there's thought put into what's being made. And usually I feel like more ingredients go into it.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time.
What are they doing? Salvador Molly's, right?
What is fast food?
Fast food is, what first comes to mind is McDonald's. You know, only because of the movie and all of that. But fast food is something that used to be pretty laden in fat and calories.
And what is slow food?
Slow food. Slow food. Help me out, anybody?
Takes a long time to make, takes a long time to eat, takes a long time to digest.
Great. Thank you for your time. Hi, this is Jacob at the Portland Farmers Market. I'm here with
Stephanie Gorman
and Chris and Ruby.
And Ruby.
Hi, Ruby. And
that's another Ruby.
And another shy Ruby. What is fast food?
First thing that comes to my mind is McDonald's, and it's evil.
What is fast food?
Things that are convenient but bad for you.
And what is slow food?
Anything here at the farmer's market that you cook yourself and enjoy with others.
I would say that slow food is food that you take time to think about and prepare, and it's more about the experience than immediate satisfaction.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time. Hi. What is fast food?
Gross. Fatty and processed and gross.
And what is slow food?
Organic farmer's market, homegrown, cooked yourself.
Cooked with love and made with the intention of the body and soul.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time. Hi, this is Jake at the Portland Farmers Market. I'm here with... What's your name, please?
Lila.
Hi, Lila. What is fast food?
Ready quick.
What is slow food?
I suppose it's a slow cook. I don't know.
And how often do you find yourself eating slow food?
Most of the time.
Great, thank you. What is fast food?
Pretty much junk food.
And what is slow food?
Something that you actually have to take time to cook yourself, or someone cooks for you. Sit down and eat it.
Great, thanks a lot. This is Jake. I'm at the Portland Farmers Market with...
Morgan.
Hey, Morgan, what is fast food?
Fast food? Anything you can get under a minute, maybe?
Oh. And what is slow food?
Slow food? You have to digest it over a whole afternoon. Like turkey. Turkey's a slow food.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey, Alyssa, what is fast food?
Fast food, what is it? It is a bunch of greasy goodness for some that you can quickly go through a drive-thru and get some... some vittles. Very, very different than what you would find here.
What is slow food?
Slow food? I'm not quite sure. I guess it could be food that takes a while for you to cook, or food that is not something you're going to get through going through the drive-thru at McDonald's or Burger King.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
My name's Joanne Taylor, Hummingbird Hill Herbary.
Hi. What is fast food?
What is fast food? Gosh, I don't know. You can pick up food fast around here.
Great. And what is slow food?
What is slow food? I don't know. Food that takes a long time to cook.
Thank you so much. Hi, George. What is fast food?
Food you can get fast.
And what is slow food?
Slow food is food that cooks slow.
And what do you find yourself eating?
Fast food.
Hi, Ishar. What is fast food?
Fast food? Food that's cooked too fast.
And what is slow food?
Food that's cooked properly in the original manner.
This is Jake. I'm at the Portland Farmers Market with...
Karen.
Hi, Karen. What is fast food?
Fast food. It's not slow. It doesn't taste good. And I don't really like it very much.
And what is slow food?
Soul food?
Slow.
Good home cooking?
This is Jake. I'm at the Portland Farmers Market with...
Doyle.
And Dawn.
What is fast food?
Gross.
Inconvenient.
And what is slow food?
Tasty.
A great way to spend time with friends.
Hey, Mark, what is fast food?
Oh, geez. What is fast food?
The opposite of slow food.
Opposite of slow food. I know, it's easier to describe slow food, I think. You know, taking the time and sitting at the table with family and knowing where everything came from and preparing it yourself. And, well, you know.
What comes to mind?
Mystery food, you know, food that you don't know where it's from, how it got there, or... made in a different state or country, or, you know, it's not for me.
Food.
Eggs.
That is your favorite food.
Eggs.
I'm here at the Fresh Pot Coffee House with
Tara.
Hi, Tara. What is fast food?
Junk food.
And what is slow food?
Good food.
And what is your favorite food?
That's hard to say. Probably greens.
Great, thank you. This is Jake. I'm here at Crema with...
Sorry, man.
What is fast food?
Fast food? As far as I can tell, it's food that's been pre-processed, frozen, and been sent to stores where they heat it up for you, essentially, or nuke it.
And what is slow food?
fast food that's not being prepared fast enough? I don't know. Is that a trick question?
I don't think I've heard.
I've never heard of slow food.
Great. And what is your favorite food?
Pizza.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time. We're here at Crema with
Nicole
and
Angela.
What is fast food?
Fast food is something you pick up at a window.
Caca.
And what is slow food?
Slow food is in a crock pot.
Oh, God. I think it's, I don't know if that's handled with care.
And what are your favorite foods?
Mashed potatoes.
Fresh fruits and vegetables.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time. What is fast food?
Fast food is the type of food that people eat when they just can't afford the time in their lives to nourish themselves.
And what is slow food?
Slow food is about community. Slow food is about taking the time that you need to make food, to get in touch with your food, to get in touch with the friends who are going to be eating the food with you, and to even get in touch with the sources of that food.
And what is your favorite food?
My favorite food, I think, is anything that's made with fresh, young, tender greens.
Great. Thanks a lot for your time.
And if you're a lover of home cooking, the Oregonian reported a few months ago a new meaning of home cooked. The number of families in the U.S. who used a personal chef in 1990 was 500. The number of American families who have a personal chef today is 150,000.
A new study of fruits and vegetables has found that nutritional content is decreasing. Biochemist Donald Davis of the University of Texas led a team of researchers who measured nutrients in 43 crops. They compared their results to those of a similar study of 13 major nutrients in 1950. Six nutrients showed noticeable declines. They included drops of 6% for protein and calcium, 9% for iron, 16% for phosphorus, 20% for vitamin C, and a decrease of 38% for riboflavin. Davis said there is a direct correlation between modern agricultural practices and the decline in nutrients. He cited selective breeding to develop new varieties, heavier use of irrigation, fertilization, weed control, and pest control. All of these practices are designed to increase crop yields.
And some more fast food facts. The Consumer Reports on Health in their March edition is talking about seeds and nuts and how they lower cholesterol. Nuts and seeds are healthful snacks because they're high in cholesterol-lowering substances. Researchers at Virginia Polytechnic and Virginia State have determined which common nuts and seeds pack the most phytosterols. Some may be rich sources of other important nutrients also. So unless you're actually trying to cut your cholesterol levels, it's still best to consume a wide variety of nuts and seeds. Limit the servings to about a quarter of a cup. And since these foods pack plenty of calories, you want to keep them to a few a day. But the seeds are actually at the top of the list. Sunflower seeds, and then pistachios, and pumpkin, and pine nuts, and flax seeds. And then we start the nuts with their sterol content, and that actually cuts the cholesterol in the body. Through walnuts, pecans, cashews, down to the bottom of their sterol content list is Brazil nuts. But they pack lots of good nutrients of all kinds, so eat your seeds and nuts.
It's hot. I like to cool off with ice cream. Recently, I sampled gelato, the Italian version of ice cream, at three shops in Portland. It was good. Not that I haven't had poor quality ice cream. A lot of the half gallons they sell in the supermarkets have artificial flavorings and other ingredients that I can't spell or pronounce, and they have a lot of air stirred in. 45 years ago, my father took my family on our first trip. Among other places, we went to the university where he had been an agriculture major. I have forgotten everything about that campus except that they had an ice cream shop at the dairy school, and I had strawberry. My father tried to follow a pattern set by my grandfather, which was to have ice cream every evening of his life. When my father was a chicken farmer, he did business with an egg distributor named Ray. Eventually, Ray sold the egg business and became a distributor for Hershey's ice cream.
Some food in my belly, need some drink for the night in my throat, need for the world to recognize it, everybody's in the same holy boat. Don't you know it ain't right for people to go hungry with all the food being thrown away, just because it ain't the right size or perfect, because you can't turn a fast dollar that way. You know it ain't right to make people grow coffee when their families could be growing food, working those lands for corporations. Don't do hungry